is the Honorable Lori Boris. Today is the 23rd of February. We're here for oral arguments on our 1:30 calendar. The first case up is Resnick versus Land Title. Are the parties here? I assume by your presence at table you both are. The second case is HealthSouth Corporation versus Boulder County Board of Commissioners. Do we have all counsel here yet? All right. We'll address that case when Resnick is done. Folks, on the Resnick case, did you both have an opportunity to see the written page concerning our oral argument instructions? Do either of you have any questions about any of those instructions? All right. The last thing I'll say before we get started is if anyone has a pager or a cell phone that might go off during oral argument and interrupt the parties of the court, please turn it off or to silent alarm so that we don't interrupt anyone. With that being said, let us go to the first case, Resnick versus Land Title. Thank you.
May it please the court, Jeffrey Behrens, attorney registration number 28007, on behalf of plaintiff appellant David Resnick. The factual background to this case is straightforward and undisputed. The plaintiff refinanced his home in October 2006. And at the time of the refinance, he was required by the lender to purchase a lender's title insurance policy, which he did from Land Title, who was serving as the agent for Old Republic Title Insurance Company. At that point in time, he was charged a bundled rate of $1,105. 2 months later, he refinanced the very same home. He was again required to purchase a lender's title insurance policy, which he did this time again through Land Title in Old Republic, and he was charged a bundled rate this time of $1,355. The question that was before the district court and the question now before this court is whether, pursuant to the rate manual that was on file by Old Republic in January of 2007, whether Land Title was required to give Mr. Resnick a significant short-term reissue credit. Before turning to the actual language of the rate manual, I think it's helpful to take a look at the statutory and regulatory scheme here in Colorado for title insurance companies. Insurers are required to file their rates with the Division of Insurance. By law, the current filed rate is the only rate that the title insurance company or agent may charge. There's a second part to the regulation, and that is that the current rate manual must be made readily available to all consumers in Colorado at the various offices of the title insurance companies and agents throughout Colorado. The regulations say that this is for, among other reasons, to promote competition and protect the consumer. So I think the statutory scheme is important to know who the audience is for the rate. And one of the people that are reading this rate and looking at it and interpreting it are the consumers. And that's the way the Division of Insurance and legislature set up the scheme. Now, the first question looking towards the rate manual that was on file in January of 2007 is what is the underlying rate? For this, we all agree we look to Section 18 of the lender's manual. We're in Denver County, and the bundled rate section, Section 18, says a bundled rate for title charges shall be given based upon the bundled rate schedule for the issuance of a mortgagee's title policy for a residential non-purchase transaction. We all agree this applies. We agree that he was correctly charged the underlying rate, the bundled rate of $1,355. There's a couple things in this section that are noteworthy, and one is there is a definition within this section. Note one tells us what the bundled rate is. It says the bundled rate includes a title insurance policy all endorsements applicable to a given insured property as determined by the title company and a tax certificate. Notably absent from the definition in this section is any indication that, as the defendant now argues, that it's a flat rate to which no credit can be applied or no additional charge is incurred. There's simply no statement in the definition. There's no statement on the following page in the actual bundled rates schedule compared to some eight other underlying rates where they specifically said that the short-term reissue credit cannot be applied to this underlying rate.
Does the basic schedule of rates include, as part of its disclosed rates, a bundled rate? Or is it a separate schedule?
They are separate schedules. They're schedules for the bundled rate that are entitled the bundled rate schedule with a list of various premiums, and the same thing for the basic rate.
So, Mr. Behrens, the paragraph that paragraph 2 that talks about the short-term rate,
correct,
it specifically refers to the basic rate and does not refer to the bundled rate. Is that right?
Well, that's right. And it's important to note that in section 2, short-term rate, this does not talk about what the underlying rate is going to be. This gives a formula for deciding whether a credit should be applied, and if so, the amount of the credit. It makes no reference whatsoever to which rate this credit will be applied to. And it could be applied to any number of rates. As we've seen, there are at least eight rates where they say it can't be applied, and the remainder of the rates are not specifically included. If it satisfies these strict requirements, it would be applied. So if you're answering the first question, whether a credit can be applied, we read from the plain language, and again, it says when a loan policy is ordered within 3 years of the original policy date of a prior owner's, lender's, or leasehold policy, we had a prior lender's policy 3 months earlier, the company will apply a credit. But it's unambiguous. There's only one way to interpret this.
Well, pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Sure. Behrens, I'm sorry, but the company will apply a credit of the basic schedule of rates.
Right. That second part is critical because that's a different question. That's how do we calculate the credit? And if we would ignore footnote 1, you certainly could calculate Mr. Resnick's credit by reference to the basic schedule of rates. You'd have an underlying bundled rate, and then you'd calculate the credit by looking at 50% of the previous policy on the basic schedule of rates and put that credit on top of the bundle rate. The reason that doesn't work is that would render note one superfluous. There'd be no point for having note one. Note one would only be a reminder of what we already know, that the bundle rate governs the underlying transaction.
So the if I may propose an alternative, why
sure.
doesn't it note one simply make abundantly clear that the short-term rate addressed in the language we've just talking about applies only to the basic schedule of rates and not to the bundled rate?
It's not speaking to the credit, though, under that interpretation. That's, again, if you read it that way, it would be reminding us of something we all agree on, that the bundled rate applies to the transaction. Here we're talking about the credit. This calculation is not to find out what the underlying rate is or what the final rate's going to be. It tells us the amount that's going to be subtracted from a different rate. So the alternative interpretation would do nothing to help us out on whether the credit should be applied.
So your interpretation then of that paragraph 2 is that the reference to the basic rate is only to determine the amount and not to determine which set of rates the short-term rate would be applied to?
Absolutely. It says the company will apply a credit, now we're talking about what the credit is, of 50% for years 1 and 2 of the basic schedule of rates. It's telling you where to go to do the calculation. At the end of that paragraph, it says we're looking at the prior policy. So the amount of the loan is not even what we're getting today. We look back at the prior policy see what the loan amount is, take that amount, apply it to the current basic schedule of rates, but we have footnote here, so we'd apply it to the current bundled schedule of rates to calculate the credit. Again, we're doing two things here. We're deciding whether, and if so, how much. And what the defendant proposes here is an interpretation that would require one to assume that the bundled rate is a flat rate to which no credit could be taken off of or no charge putting on top of it. And that assumption is not supported by the plain language of the filed rate. First, we must look at the plain language. If we cannot determine what it says from the plain language, which we submit, it says the company will apply the credit. We say there's only one way to read that. If we cannot determine by just reading the language, we would go down the standard statutory construction principles. We would look at the language and give consistent, harmonious, sensible effect to all parts. Exceptions would be narrowly construed to preserve the general rule. Express enumeration of exclusions, which we have, again, here for five different rates, would indicate that language should apply unless specifically excluded. And finally, if we still don't have an answer, in this situation, we would construe the rate against the sophisticated drafter who used that language. They easily could have said the short-term rate doesn't apply. They chose not to. They said it eight other places here, and they chose not to. We'd construe it against them and in favor of the consumer for who these rates are written. Let me just quickly hit one more point, and I'd like to reserve my additional time for rebuttal. If it's our position that extrinsic evidence is improper, it's not needed, and even in this case improper because you'd have documents or affidavits changing the filed rate on which the consumer relies and the legislature says the consumer can rely. If, in fact, this extrinsic evidence, historical rate filings, affidavits, is properly considered, there's significant evidence in the record that raises genuine issues of material fact. Again, we submitted, albeit after the reply brief, only after getting the order of the judge, the entire rate manual, which the structure shows that when they wanted to exclude the short-term rate from underlying rate, they did so. The lack of a further definition of a bundled rate that says it's a flat rate to which no credit or charges can apply. We've given the historical rate filings, which have also support our interpretation. When they wanted to exclude the credit, they did so. We've given rate filings of other title insurance company for which Land Title serves as agents. In Chicago Title and Security Union, when they did not want a credit, a short-term credit to apply to the bundled rate, they explicitly said so. Land Title did not. And finally, defendant's own answer in affidavits set forth Mr. Resnick's transactions and the charges. And again, the additional charges for closing costs and recording fees undermine defendant's argument that it's a flat rate by definition to which no additional charges can be added. So at the very minimum, if extrinsic evidence is considered, there is a significant genuine issue of material fact. And if you don't have questions, I'd like to reserve the remaining 2 minutes.
Mr. Behrens, you have about 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm Larry Hamill. With me at council table is Meredith Monroe. We're here as counsel for the defendant Land Title. One point that should not be overlooked in this case is that all of the references to rate filings are rate filings by Old Republic. There are no rate filings by Land Title, which is the defendant in this case. So the claims against Land Title based upon rate filings are unfounded on that basis alone. Land Title is an agent. It collects premiums. It pays the premiums over to its principal, and it receives compensation for acting as an agent. It does not file its rate filings. Turning, however, to the more appropriate aspects of this case. This case basically is a lawsuit that has been conceived by counsel for an ill-defined and undefined or ill-defined class of plaintiffs. This particular plaintiff, in an urge to drain all of the equity out of his house or his and her friend's house, had two refinancings. In those refinancings, the rate that was charged by Old Republic, by Land Title on behalf of Old Republic, was the rate that is specifically identified in the rate filing as a bundled rate. Council keeps talking about the bundled rate and the basic rate as being distinct, in fact they are. If there were no distinction, and that distinction being that with a bundled rate you can have a short-term reissue credit, if there were no distinction, there would be no reason to have a bundled rate. You'd simply take the bundled rate, and if it qualified for the short-term credit, you'd apply that credit. In this case, we have a bundled rate. Candidly, I do not know how it could be written more precisely than it is in the rate manual when it says that the bundled rate shall apply to this kind of refinancing transaction in Denver, Colorado. Counsel, in his opening brief and in his briefs to the trial court, calculated what he believed ought to be the appropriate fee charged in this case. And it's interesting to note the approach he took. He said, well, we have this bundled rate provision, which is the provision in the rate manual, which talks about short-term rate being calculated on the basic schedule of rates. But he says, in this case, because we had a bundled rate policy on the first transaction, we should go and take the bundled rate policy to figure the credit out on the second transaction. It's hard to define or to discern sometimes in the arguments that are made, but not only is he ignoring the fact that there is a bundled rate, a flat rate, but he's also now converting the short-term rate language to saying that if you had a bundled rate and if you have a second bundled rate, you then take a credit against the second bundled rate and an amount calculated by reference to the first bundled rate. There is nothing in this rate manual that talks about a short-term rate or credit based upon a manipulation of the bundled rate in the prior transaction. It simply doesn't exist. Council makes a point out of saying there are 6 or 7 or 8 other provisions in this rate manual where there was an express exclusion of the short-term rate being applicable. If you read those carefully, you will see that they are all rates that are not flat rate policies. There are a whole variety of different rates. For example, if you take a look at short-term rate, this is section 2 of the lender's rate manual, note 2 about which much is made by council. It says the short-term rate is not available for those residential refinance orders addressed in paragraph 3. We turn to paragraph 3, and that's called the substitution loan rate. And that's just saying that the short-term rate doesn't apply to the substitution loan rate. Well, the substitution loan rate is basically based on the base rate, the basic rate. And so the thrust of the rate manual is that if you're dealing with a basic rate kind of transaction and you've got a reissue within a period of time, you should get a credit based upon the basic rate originally paid and the basic rate in the new policy. There is not one thing in this rate manual that says where you have a bundled rate that you should in any way apply a credit against that bundled rate. The affidavits that we filed in this case are very clear that that bundled rate was calculated by Old Republic in order to meet the competition, which is the goal of the regulation of insurance agencies and insurance companies in Colorado who write title insurance. They want open competition. If Mr. Resnick thought that he was getting a bum deal, what Mr. Resnick should have done is what is provided for in the statute, and that is in section 10.4.418, which provides that if an insured or a person who is affected by an insurance policy believes that a wrong rate has been applied or the rule has been applied improperly, he can file a demand with the insurer saying, explain why you did this. If he does not get satisfaction from the insurer, he then goes to the Division of Insurance, to the Insurance Commissioner. And one thing that counsel seems to disregard is that under Section 4, Section 10.4.418A4, 4A, if there is an excess premium charged, the insurance commissioner can order, after a hearing, can order the insurance company to repay that plus 18% interest. What happened here is that we get this 6 or 7 claim complaint on a class action for the class that apparently involves people outside of Denver and involves transactions other than this kind of transaction, an enormously expensive class action, which we nipped in the bud, because it should be nipped in the bud. He should have gone to the insurance commissioner and said, Mr. Commissioner, have a hearing, refund to me my excess. If the land title folks have read the old Republic scale rate manual incorrectly, refund to me, and we're through. Instead, we get Consumer Protection Act, we get breach of fiduciary duty, we get breach of contract, implied in fact, a whole panoply of things that are never contemplated by the regulation of the insurance, by the insurance division of title insurance companies. It is important to remember that what we're dealing with here is the intention of the insurance company. Now, I know that much has been made almost in a sort of nudge-nudge kind of approach by counsel for the plaintiff, that, well, Land Title wants to come in now, or perhaps Old Republic wants to come in now and tell us what they intended. But I think that it is important to remember that it is the intent of the insurance company that is important here. These are not regulated insurance rates. They are regulated by the desire, stated clearly under both the regulations of the Department of Insurance and the statute, to inculcate in this system competition among the insurers who are offering similar packages of insurance. We have shown in our affidavits that this has been since the early 2000s. This policy has been followed slavishly by Old Republic and by its agent, Land Title, to use only bundled rates, that there are no adjustments to a bundled rate. Council mentions recording charges and those kinds of things. Those are not included in the bundled rates. What are included in the bundled rates are a tax certificate, all endorsements required by the lender, and the insurance policy. The reason that that's important is because that's what was being offered by our competitors, and that also was what was being demanded by our insureds. Our insureds in this case are the lenders, not Mr. Resnick. He didn't pay for this policy. It was deducted from his loan proceeds, but he's not the insured, has no contract rights under the policy. The insureds, because of federal disclosure, credit disclosure requirements, and all those kinds of things, wanted to have a nice, simple mechanism for refinancings. And that nice, simple mechanism was a bundled rate. That's, if you start talking about making adjustments by credits and so forth, you get away from the whole idea behind a bundled rate, which was to make life simple and to make regulatory compliance easy on the part of the lenders, the insureds, the parties with whom we had a contract, not Mr. Resnick. There simply is nothing in this record that would support the position that Mr. Resnick asserts, and that is that we should take his new bundled rate and credit against that new bundled rate part of his old bundled rate that is not provided for in our rate manual. The rate manual is very straightforward. It says that in these kinds of transactions, the bundled rate will apply. He would have had us write it, the bundled rate will apply and no other rate will apply, or the bundled rate will apply and there's no credit. If you were dealing with a bundled rate kind of policy, or excuse me, a basic rate kind of policy, that argument might make some sense. And that is where in the rate manual, the reference to the short-term rate not being applicable is to those kinds of insurance policies, coverages that are based upon base rate, not on some other fixed rate. We have a fixed flat rate. It's intended by the insurer to be a fixed flat rate. It has been applied without exception for the number of years that it's been in place. It was applied here. There was a mechanism if Mr. Resnick thought he was being abused to that he could follow. He chose not to. He chooses instead to bring before this court and Judge McGahee the argument that is unsupported by logic and certainly unsupported by the express language of the rate filing. I can only say that we've supplied evidence by affidavit and established the policies and the intention of the insured. We address all of the arguments that were raised by the plaintiff and his complaint. The complaint consists of a number of different claims. Summary judgment was granted on all of those claims. And if you look carefully at those claims, they're all based upon the underlying concept that we simply charged the wrong rate. So when council argues that there has been evidence shown that we charged the wrong rate, I do not know what that evidence is. They have presented no evidence by way of affidavit or otherwise, other than council's own certification that an article which is hearsay and which amounts to a diatribe against the insurance industry in general is an accurate copy, and also that enclosed and attached are accurate copies of the various rate filings in the state. Those matters are not in dispute, at least the rate filings are not in dispute. The fulminations against the title insurance companies are certainly in dispute by my client, but they're irrelevant to this case in any event. This is not a case that should be pending as a class action. It should not be pending at all. The rate filings are absolutely clear, and they should be enforced as they are written, and that means that we apply the bundled rate to this transaction without any credits. That's what the regulations, that's what the rate filing says, and that's how this court should rule. And we respectfully ask for such a ruling. Be happy to answer any questions, but I won't take any more of your time if not necessary.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Eric.
Mr. Behrens, you've got, according to my clock, 2 minutes and 21 seconds.
What we hear in the briefs and what we heard today is that the rate filings are absolutely clear that the bundled rate should be applied. That's not in dispute. We agree that the bundled rate should be applied. The dispute is whether, pursuant to the clear language of Section 2 short-term rate, where it says in a refinance transaction in Denver County when there was a previous lender's policy within 3 years, that the company will apply a credit. The bundled rate is the bundled rate. This says we have a credit. Every time they didn't want this type of credit to apply, they said so. Now, for the first time, I think in the Court of Appeals briefing, we heard, well, the bundled rate is a flat rate. It's unlike the basic rate. You can't add charges, you can't subtract credits. The problem with that argument is it doesn't appear in the rate manual. It does not say that anywhere. They could have said that. They could have defined it. They could have used the language that they used 8 times before. They didn't. It says the company will apply a credit.
Mr. Behrens, could you address the failure to follow the statutory procedure of appeal to the Division of Insurance?
That's not required. That is not required under the statutory procedure. As we've seen in a number of cases cited in our brief, we are allowed to take this to the district court and here to the Court of Appeals, and courts are able to interpret this type of regulation. And in fact, they've admitted that they've applied it the same way across the board. But that doesn't matter. The rate itself is what matters. And if I could quickly just cite the court to Denver and Rio Grande versus Marty, 353 P. Second, 1095, Colorado Supreme Court, 1960. At 1097, talking about the filed rate doctrine, it says ignorance or misquotation of rates is not an excuse for paying or charging either less or more than the rate filed. This rule is undeniably strict, and it obviously may work hardship in some cases, but it embodies the policy which has been adopted by Congress in the regulations of its interstate commerce in order to prevent unjust discrimination. It's our position that the defendant should be held to the plain language of its own rate. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments today. We appreciate them. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.